You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
I want to continue responding to Jim McLarty's article critiquing the pre-wrath position. It's called The Pre-Wrath Rapture of the Church. And I'll leave a link to his full article in the show notes. Well, the Great Commission is not all about going out and saving people, all right? There's that little qualification there as well. It says teaching them to obey everything, what? I have commanded you. And we know that's to the church, because what does it say? And remember, I am with you always to the end of the age. Well, the church is up, will exist up to the end of the age, which will, and at the end of the age, we know from, ironically, Matthew 24, the very passage that pre-tribulationists reject that have nothing to do with their church. I find that quite amusing, tragically amusing. We know that it will be Jesus' return, his parousia, that's going to cut short this age. Teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. One of the longest discourses from Jesus just before his death, at the very end of his life, was the Olivet Discourse. And that discourse contains one of the most concentrated discourses in all of the Gospels of imperatives or commands. And often you can have imperatives put in the future tense form as well, if you understand Greek. And nevertheless, there's a lot of commands in Matthew 24 and 25. And so it's ironic here. Jesus, you know, at one side of the mouth, pre-tribulationists say, oh no, we need to obey Matthew 28:20, the Great Commission. And then they'll say, oh no, the Olivet Discourse, that's not for the church. The church are not supposed to be obeying the commands there in Matthew 24:25. And it's actually quite sad, because some of the most severe warnings from our Lord are found in this very text. You know, Matthew 24:25, remember, I have told you, you know, ahead of time. He doesn't just say, I've told you, remember, you know, warning, I've told you this, but he says ahead of time. In other words, it seems to convey that when these events come down, the great tribulation, the Antichrist is revealed, his great tribulation is being poured out on the church, Jesus is saying, you're not going to be in a state to be able to evaluate now. Okay, now I'm going to get my spiritual house in order. No. What Jesus is saying here is that you need to get your spiritual house in order before it. And this makes sense, because his illustrations, the parables, you know, parables of the 10 virgins, it's all about, and again, the illustration of Noah. It's all about that you don't wait to prepare, get spiritually prepared. You got to do that beforehand. And yet pre-tribulationists are mitigating this warning against the people of God. This is why I have the title in my episode today, Why Pre-Tribulation Teachers Refuse to Obey Jesus' Great Commission. It's because they have a tradition. Their tradition precludes them to warn the very people of God that they're supposed to, they're claiming to be shepherds over. On this program today, I'm going to be thoroughly refuting Jim McLarty's notion that he can disconnect Jesus' teaching from what Paul taught and Peter and James. We'll see that Paul, James, Peter, they draw from Jesus' teaching. And so this demonstrates that Matthew 24 is for the church. If it's not for the church, then why does Paul and James and Peter teach their church and their church people, right, that Jesus' teaching is for them? See, Paul, James, and Peter, they can draw from Jesus' Olivet Discourse and teach the church these commandments. But Pastor Jim McLarty is not doing the same. He's not following their example. It's because Jim McLarty has the pre-tribulational tradition. And somehow, you know, 1,600 years later after Jesus' Olivet Discourse, oh, we're told now, no, the Olivet Discourse, that's no longer for the church. No, but for 1,600 years, you know, we could teach as if it was for the church, but somehow in the early 1800s, oh, now, no. Jesus is Matthew 24, Olivet Discourse. No, that's no longer for the church. No, that's for you know, quote-unquote, Jewish tribulation saints, you know, during the quote-unquote tribulation period. And, you know, the last time I checked, Matthew 28, verse 20 didn't say, teach them to obey everything I have commanded you, except for the Olivet Discourse. I don't recall, you know, unless there's some textual variant there that I'm not aware of. But I'm assuming that Jim McLarty's Bible says this exact same thing on Matthew 28, verse 20. Okay, so let's jump in this. In his article, I'm on this section, it's called, Does the Rapture Happen Concurrent with the Appearance of Christ in Judgment? Yeah, he opens it up by saying, this is an essential element of pre-wrath teaching. In order to keep the church on earth until the last possible moment, the return of Christ in judgment must happen immediately after the catching away of the church. The two events must occur back to back. And then he cites, you know, Van Camp in here. McLarty goes on, he says, this conclusion is based on several extra textual assumptions. Well, let's see here. Like, how do we know that the church is actually the reference point for Christ's example? Given the fact that the book of Revelation likens Israel and Judea to a woman who flees to the wilderness to be protected for 3.5 years, couldn't we just as easily apply the Noah and Lot stories of deliverance to Israel, the original audience for the Olivet Discourse? I don't exactly know exactly what he is saying there. It just doesn't make sense. But it's okay. In his next statement, he says, "But as we've already discussed, I don't see any evidence that the Olivet Discourse includes any reference to the rapture at all." Of course, that's first of all, that's a biased statement by McLarty. He has my book, all right, and he has not. It's not that he doesn't see any evidence because he doesn't want to see any evidence. And I can prove that. He has my book. And in my book, I have a major section in part two of my book. I give four reasons why the rapture is found in Matthew 24. I mean, it's on, you know, reason number one, Jesus uses rapture language. Reason number two, Jesus uses Daniel on the resurrection. Reason number three, Jesus and Paul address the inception of the parousia. Reason number four, gathered out of the great tribulation. These four reasons, McLarty has not even touched. And I've also added a couple more reasons as well. In fact, I've done some previous episodes on that. So, page 87, 89, 91, and 94. Mr. McLarty has no excuse not to be aware of, quote-unquote, this evidence that he says he does not see. Okay, now, here we go. This is a statement that he says, quote, if there is, I'll read the whole statement and then go back to the first part. If there is a deliverance message embedded in the Noah Lot references, it cannot be the church, since the church neither existed as Jesus spoke, nor is there indication in Christ's language that he was addressing the church. Okay, I'm going to respond, first of all, to the first statement here. So he says, there's again, if there is a deliverance message embedded in the Noah Lot references, it cannot be the church. Since the church neither existed as Jesus spoke. I have to repeat this this one statement. He says, since the church neither existed as Jesus spoke. Folks, I have been engaging pre-tribulationists for now, I think about 22 years. 22 years. That's a long time, isn't it? I have collected numerous critiques, books, monographs, dissertations, articles, blog posts, journal articles, audio files, you name it, sermons. I'm always fascinated to see how pre-tribulationists respond to pre-wrath. In those almost about 22 years, this statement right here by Jim McLarty, I'm going on record here, when he says, since the church neither existed as Jesus spoke, this is the most absurd statement I have ever, ever heard a pre-tribulationist make. Think about what it is saying. Basically, Jesus could not have taught about the church unless it first existed. In other words, McLarty is saying Jesus is incapable of giving prophecy. That's what he's saying here. He's saying Jesus cannot prophesy about the church because the church has to exist first. Folks, what in the world is that? This is messed up. He's essentially saying that Jesus cannot give prophecy unless it's already happening. I have to repeat this again. Listen, if there is a deliverance message embedded in the Noah/Lot references, it cannot be to the church. Now listen to this. It can't be to the church because he says the church didn't exist when Jesus spoke. Now let that sink in for a moment. What he's really saying there. And this is not just McLarty. I've heard other pre-tribulationist teachers basically make this kind of, in so many words, this kind of statement. That no, Jesus can't give church instruction because the church hasn't existed yet. Okay, now that has sunk in a bit, and you see the bankruptcy and how unbiblical that statement is. And this is one of the reasons why they say that the church will not be part of the Daniel's 70th week, the future 7-year period, because they say, well, the first 69 weeks, the church did not exist. Therefore, during the 70th week of Daniel, which is still in the future, therefore the church will not exist as well. Again, that's flawed thinking because the church did not exist. The church did not exist, obviously, during the first 69 weeks. That doesn't mean that it's not going to exist during the 70th week of Daniel. And of course, we see in the New Testament that it will enter into the 7-year period because of what Jesus teaches and Paul and the book of Revelation, that God is going to work with both the church and Israel at the same time. I want to reinforce this with demonstrating its absurdity, its inconsistency. For example, let's the new covenant in Jeremiah, right? Jeremiah prophesied the new covenant, which would, of course, be enacted in and fulfilled in the church. Now, is McLarty saying that Jeremiah could not give prophecy because the church, quote, did not exist at the time of Jeremiah? The Abrahamic covenant, right? A large aspect of the Abrahamic covenant is fulfilled in the church, but the church didn't exist then. You know, we could go down the line here. with a lot of Old Testament prophecies. You know, the prophecies from Joel 2 that's fulfilled at Pentecost. I mean, and you wonder, they wonder why many pre-tribs are moving away from pre-tribulationism. It's because of this logic and coming over to the pre-wrath position. I mean, look at John 14. John 14, right? The upper room discourse. And this is ironic because pre-tribulationists believe that when Jesus says, you know, go away to prepare a place for you, but I'm coming again, right, to receive you into myself. All pre-tribulationists believe, and I'm assuming McLarty believes as well, that that refers to the rapture, which I believe it does. But that was given, John 14 was given before the quote-unquote church age. So that contradicts McLarty's hermeneutical lens here. His hermeneutical lens, his principle here is, well, an application to the church cannot be an application unless Jesus existed at the time of giving that application. The Great Commission. Here's another example, right? The Great Commission. And Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Well, wait a minute. If Jesus taught to, of course, it's the disciples, right? But when he commanded them to the disciples, guess what? The church didn't exist. So McLarty has to be consistent and say that those commandments have nothing to do with the church. The Great Commission is not for the church. But I don't think he's willing to do that. Then he has to be inconsistent. I mean, you have Matthew 16. There's a Matthew 16. Jesus is preparing the foundation members of the church, his disciples, for church instruction. Is McLarty denying that Matthew, the instruction that Jesus is giving in Matthew 16 and 18 is not for the church? Well, he has to be. He has to be denying that, according to his hermeneutical principle here, that Jesus has to exist. Oh, I'm sorry, the church has to exist. As Jesus spoke. Again, I'm going to read this is his hermeneutical principle. It, that is this message of Noah and Lot references. Again, you can put anything or let's just say church instruction, right? It cannot be to the church or any teaching that is. It cannot be to the church, since the church neither existed as Jesus spoke. Jesus has to, for something to apply to the church, Jesus somehow can't give prophecy. He can't give instruction to his disciples unless the church actually exists when he does so. I would say McLarty is incredibly mistaken in the way he views a method of biblical interpretation, sound biblical interpretation. What he fails to do, see, he has this like all or nothing hermeneutic. It's not all or nothing. There's a progression. When you read the Gospels, you know, it's not as if, okay, well, the moment that Jesus was resurrected, bam, the church existed. Okay, and then everything before that has nothing to do with the church, and then everything after that has to do with the church. That is flawed, and by the way, that is a very common way of that pre-tribulationists view Scripture, and that's mistaken. A correct way is you look at the Gospels and you see there's a progression through Jesus' ministry. The more he is rejected by the Jewish leadership, the more you see him transitioning to giving instruction that he's starting this new community of God, aka the church. It's a progression. That's why you see the closer you get to the end of Jesus' ministry, he focuses more on preparing, that's the operative word, preparing his disciples to form this new community of God, giving them instruction, preparing them, including the Olivet Discourse in Matthew 24. And of course, John, we see that he tells the disciples that, listen, it's not in your strength. The Comforter is coming, Spirit who will teach the disciples in encouragement and in truth is coming. But he's giving them, he's preparing them. And McLarty views the scripture, like I said, like it's like, you know, once at one juncture, you know, one second, I don't know, I think, you know, it seems like he thinks immediately after the resurrection, but he's inconsistent on that, because when did Jesus give the upper room discourse? Before his death, before Jesus' death, right? John 14. And yet, McLarty and other pre-tribulationists believe that, you know, when Jesus is giving rapture teaching in John 14, before even his death, even before his resurrection, even before his crucifixion. And isn't it interesting that just two or three days before the upper room discourse, he gives the Olivet Discourse. He gives the Olivet Discourse. And yet, pre-tribulationists say, oh, no, that can't be rapture teaching. No. Well, wait a minute. You can't tell me that Jesus can give rapture teaching the day before his crucifixion, but no. 2 days before his crucifixion, no. Jesus can't give rapture teaching. That's for, quote unquote, you know, Jewish tribulation saints. I'm sorry. I don't buy that at all. There's no evidence for that. In fact, the language is very similar between Matthew 24 and John 14. Of course, Matthew 24 obviously is a more developed discourse on the rapture, on the second coming of Christ, where John 14 is a more compact discourse on the second coming of Christ. So let me just clarify. You have to understand why McLarty and other pre-tribulationists don't believe Matthew 24, at least one of the main reasons why they do not believe that Matthew 24 and 25, the Olivet Discourse, is not for the church, is because, you know, coming back to this principle he has, he says that the church did not exist. The church did not, Jesus could not give prophecy about the church, okay? That's what he's saying here. It cannot be to the church, since the church neither existed as Jesus spoke. Okay? So, again, as I cited all these reasons why demonstrate the inconsistency of his statement here, I also want to cite, to Mr. McLarty, if you claim that Matthew 24, that Jesus is teaching on the second coming of Christ, you say that is not for the church, I have a very direct question for you. Why does Paul, James, and Peter cite from Matthew 24 and instruct their people who are part of the church about the second coming of Christ? By the way, I have never received a satisfactory answer to that question. This is a question that plagues pre-tribulationism, because they know James and Peter and Paul cite from Matthew 24, applying it to their church situation. This is highly problematic for pre-tribulationism. By the way, if you're pre-wrath out there, use this argument against pre-tribulationism. This is a very powerful argument. In fact, I have in my book, in the appendix, there is a, let me turn there here, it's appendix number 2, is parallels between Jesus and Paul. I give 30 parallels between Jesus' teaching on the second coming and Paul's teaching on the second coming in 1 and 2 Thessalonians. And you often hear pre-tribulationists say, well, yeah, there's a few similarities between Jesus and Paul in their respective teachings. That's not true. That's not true at all. There's 30 of them. And then a lot of pre-tribulationists say, well, there's some contradictions. No, there isn't. I've responded to all these so-called inconsistencies or contradictions in that appendix. So that's in my book, Antichrist Before the Day of the Lord. So here, you know, Paul, in 1 and 2, let me just back up for a moment. Who is he writing to in 1st and 2nd Thessalonians? He's writing to Thessalonians, right? Are they part of the church? Yes. And pre-tribulationists would admit that the Thessalonians are part of the church. It's part of the church age. And again, coming back to my question, why does Paul draw 30 parallels from the Olivet Discourse? If the Olivet Discourse is not for the church, it's for all, those are for Jewish saints during the tribulation period, then why does Paul draw 30 parallels? And we know, first of all, Paul even explicitly, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, he explicitly says that this is a word from the Lord. Of course, we know that this is the Olivet Discourse, this tradition would have been handed down to Paul. And so he draws 30 parallels from Jesus' teaching to apply to the church. But not just Paul. James does the same thing. And it's fascinating because James is citing Jesus' Olivet Discourse referring to his second coming, parousia. James 5:7 says, "So be patient, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's return. Think of how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the ground and is patient for it until it receives the early and late rains. You also be patient and strengthen your hearts, for the Lord's return is near. Do not grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, so that you may not be judged. See, the judge stands before the gates." James is drawing from Matthew 24. In fact, he's drawing from a section of Matthew 24 that places the return of Jesus after the Antichrist Great Tribulation. Okay? And James here is basically, you know, he's saying, be patient. You know, and he's using the illustration drawn from the farmer who waits for the precious fruit, right? Fruit doesn't just imminently, you know, pop up. No, there's a delayed, there's a stage in which there's a, you know, before the harvest, okay? Anyway, so going back to my question, if Matthew 24 is Jesus is teaching of his own second coming, if this is not for the church, then why does James apply it? Apply Matthew 24 to his own letter in his own situation to believers, whether it's, you know, Jewish believers or Gentile believers, they're part of the church. Again, I've never received a satisfactory answer. Oh, and I also want to mention, you know, speaking of just going back to Paul for a moment, it's not just in 1st and 2nd Thessalonians that he applies it. He applies in Corinthians, which is, of course, the church, right? The Corinthians were part of the church. Corinthians, Philippians as well. Yeah, and then we have Peter, which is interesting because we're told in Mark that especially the Peter, James, and John, Andrew, they're questioning him privately, referring to the Olivet Discourse. So Peter was a first-hand listener, audience member to the Olivet Discourse. Certainly Peter didn't mess up McLarty's principle here. No. Because Peter understands that Jesus' teaching, Matthew 24, is for the church, not some, you know, Jewish tribulation saints during the seven-year period. 2 Peter 3:4, and saying, "Where is the promise of his coming? For ever since the fathers fell asleep, all continues just as it was from the beginning of creation." 2 Peter 3:12, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be destroyed and burning, and the elements will melt with intense heat. So here, Peter, drawing from the Olivet Discourse as well, understands this is for church teaching. So, I can't miss John, which is interesting because, right, John John was also there when Jesus gave the Olivet Discourse. And yet John is drawing from the Olivet Discourse in 1 John 2:28. Now, little children, abide in him so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not shrink away from him in shame at his coming. When you have a Procrustean classical dispensational hermeneutic framework that chops off Jesus' teaching from the rest of the New Testament, that's a red flag. I think that should be a red flag for a lot of believers. There is a consistency here. There is a progression in the New Testament. Why do the disciples and other disciples, not just the main disciples, but other disciples of Christ, why do they apply it to their church situation? They're not just applying amorphous, spiritual lessons here. Because sometimes you'll hear pre-tribulation and say, well, yeah, Matthew 24 is not for the church, but we can draw from some spiritual lessons. No. No, that's not what's being said in these texts. They understand that the events themselves, the Antichrist Great Tribulation, and these events will concretely be experienced by believers just before Christ's second coming. Of course, Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 makes this most explicit. It doesn't end with Paul, James, Peter, John. It continues into the early church. Up to at least the year 250, just over at least 200 years, for 200 years. And I've challenged any pre-tribulationist with this statement, and that is, for the first 200 years, in fact, I would argue the first 1700 years, but especially the first 200 years, you will not find, well, let me put it this way. Every single church father who spoke on the relationship between the rapture and the day of the Lord, okay, or the second coming, the relationship there, they all of them affirmed that the church will experience the Antichrist Great Tribulation. They will be here for the Antichrist. In my there's a appendix number 5. It's called "What Did the Early Church Believe?" In my book "Antichrist Before the Day of the Lord: What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Return of Christ," I give the primary. It's not little snippets here and there. One little phrase or one sentence. No, I give the primary literature here. And you can see the Epistle of Barnabas, Shepherd of Hermas, Justin Martyr, Irenaeus, Tertullian, Hippolytus, Cyprian. They explicitly taught that the church would encounter the Antichrist. You won't find a single church father that taught otherwise. You just won't. In fact, we're talking about Matthew 24, right? Well, the early church. The early church, there's a document called the Didache. Okay, the Didache. The Didache also taught that the church would encounter the Antichrist. In fact, the Didache is considered to be the earliest church document to exist that we know of outside of the New Testament. Arguably, it was written even before the first century was over. Of course, some would argue that there's maybe some stages in which it was written. Nevertheless, the early church authors who put this document together, they understood that they're actually drawing from Matthew 24, and they understood, they interpreted as this is applying to the church. If Matthew 24 was not for the church, then why do you have the early church using Matthew 24 for the church? In fact, let me just read you a statement here. Yes, this is what I wrote here on page 195. The main gospel source for the Didache 16 draws from Matthew 24:25, alluding frequently from it. I give the statements here in this page, but this is interesting. It says, I said, incidentally, in two earlier chapters, the Didache interprets the elect who are gathered in Matthew 24, verse 31, as the church. This is what the Didache writes. Quote, I mean, this is the first, now think about this. This is the very first commentary outside of the New Testament, the very first commentary on Matthew 24. And they have no question that this is for the church. They write, quote, "So may your church be gathered together from the ends of the earth into your kingdom," Didache 9:4. And then it says, quote, "Remember your church, Lord, to deliver it from all evil and to make it perfect in your love. And from the four winds gather the church that has been sanctified into your kingdom, which you have prepared for it." That's Didache chapter 10, verse 5. And you can see here, I have a chart here showing how the Didache draws from Matthew 24. So you have the early church, at least in this document here, showing that, yeah, there's no question. Matthew 24 is for the church. Now, pre-tribulationists will say, well, that's church history. That's, you know, those aren't inspired documents. Well, first of all, no, they're not inspired documents, but it's very telling that the first generation of the church understood Matthew 24 to be for the church. And number two is, okay, you want to go the inspired route? Well, guess what? The Apostle Paul's letters are inspired. John is inspired. Peter is inspired. So why won't you believe them? Why are you going to be selective here? Matthew 24, 25, the Olivet Discourse is for the church. And this is why when Jesus gave the command in the Great Commission, teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you, pre-tribulational teachers are refusing to obey Jesus' command here. And that's sad because there will be one day a generation of Christians, the last generation of the church, they will, mark my word here, not my word, but Jesus' word, they will see the Antichrist revelation. And those who have been taught, those pre-tribs who have been taught all their life, oh, they're going to be out of here, they're going to be raptured away in beds of ease, they're never going to see this, they are going to have their faith vulnerable. And let me tell you something, a lot of them will apostatize. Now, my theology teaches that I believe that God's true elect will not apostatize. But we have to understand something. Warnings are genuine. God uses warnings to persevere the faith of his people. So that this is why it's dangerous when pre-tribulationists will teach their people that large chunks of the New Testament, particularly here in our instance, Matthew 24, 25, those warnings, those are not for you. Those are for some other group of people. You know, again, Jewish believers during the great tribulation period. That's dangerous teaching, people, and they're refusing to obey Jesus's commands. And we find quite a bit of commands in Matthew 24 and 25. I alluded to this earlier, but the second half of Matthew 28, verse 20 says, "And remember, I am with you always to the end of the age." Well, where else do we see that statement? In Matthew 24. The end of the age will be cut short with the parousia of Christ. And what, again, it's inconsistent. Pre-tribulationists in one side of the mouth to say, oh, yeah, the church will exist up to the end of the age. Oh, but the end of the age mentioned in Matthew 24, that's not the church age. I'm sorry, but that's tradition, people. That's not a Berean spirit. That is a tradition. They're reading that their theology through the lens of their encrusted pre-tribulational tradition. The first time we hear this business about, Matthew 24, it's not for the church, is 1,700 years later after Jesus gave the Olivet Discourse. Somehow we're supposed to believe a few theologians in the 1800s that tell us, "Oh no, we got it wrong all this time." No. We're going to be raptured out before the Antichrist, Great Tribulation. Matthew 24, 25. That's not a teaching for the church. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to accept that. I just want to conclude really quick here with one other statement he says. The second statement he says, if there is, again, let me just recap here. He says, quote, if there is a deliverance message embedded in the Noah Lot references, it cannot be to the church, since the church neither existed as Jesus spoke, already addressed that. And then he says, quote, nor is there any indication in Christ's language that he was addressing the church. Of course, that's just completely wrong. Once again, there's a lot of language, namely because who is he addressing? He's addressing the disciples. The disciples are Jesus is preparing them to be the founding members of the church. Again, it comes back to this whole presupposition, this construct that McLarty has that somehow Jesus cannot prepare his disciples for the church. Matthew 24 is all about it, and we know that because he's distinguishing unbelievers from believers in the present age. Yeah, actually use that term, the age, up to the end of the age. And then he says, one objection he says here, the Olive Discourse can only be applicable contextually to the inhabitants of Jerusalem praying that their flight wouldn't be on the Sabbath when the abomination desolation is in the temple. Again, he's just simply wrong here. He's not taking in consideration the milieu of his audience. The milieu of, I mean, first of all, if I would have read that, I thought that's coming from a preterist. Preterism makes the exact same argument, which is kind of ironic. His audience are Jews living at that time. Of course, Jesus is going to draw from the social context of his audience. His audience are not just Jews, but they are believing Jews, and they are his disciples who will form the church. Not to mention that McLarty is wrong on another point here. Jesus uses universal language in Matthew 24. He talks about nation will rise up in arms against nation, kingdom against kingdom, famines and earthquakes in various places. He's not just talking about Jerusalem, you know, as the preterists would want to claim. He also talks about and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached throughout the whole inhabited earth as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. The end, his second coming is going to affect the whole world. He talks about the universal language of, for example, Matthew 24:27, for just like the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. And he talks about the celestial disturbances, the Son of Man arriving on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. I'm sorry, but McLarty seems to be drawing from preterist arguments, which I think is deeply mistaken, because preterism, these objections would be applied to preterism as well. Matthew 24:31, and he will send his angels with a loud trumpet blast, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from the one end of heaven to the other. Doesn't sound like Jerusalem to me, does it? All right, and or at least limited to Jerusalem, right? And there's a lot of other universal language, especially when you get into some of the illustrations, and of course Matthew 25. So again, the arguments here are McLarty. He just has this frame of mind. He just not willing to see this evidence. It just comes back to once again the mandate for the church to not be selective with Jesus's teaching, okay? And I believe McLarty is being highly selective and applying what he wants to apply to his people. I'm sorry, that's just what he's doing here. I know that sounds like a harsh statement, but I'm sorry, pre-tribulationism is a dangerous teaching. It's preparing the people of God to be vulnerable. And this is exactly what Jesus taught not to do. Matthew 24:25. Remember, I have told you this ahead of time, because Jesus knows if you don't spiritually prepare, if you don't not just, you know, spiritually prepare, but part of that is to understand these events, you will be vulnerable. And pastors, preacher pastors, need to step back, set their tradition aside for a moment and read Matthew 24, 25 anew and ask the Spirit to give them a renewed understanding of this text. And again, I would remind them, you have Paul, Peter, James, John, the early church, all these individuals and the groups, all of them, they're using Matthew 24 and 25 for church teaching. Why are you not using it as well? To recap here, Matthew 24, 25 is a teaching for the church, given, of course, the audience, Jesus' audience, who are going to be the founding members of the church. Jesus is preparing the church. He's preparing, he's giving the disciples instruction, teaching, and he's preparing them before he leaves them. God is not going to, he's not beginning church instruction, after Jesus leaves them, but he is preparing, Jesus is preparing the disciples for this new community of God. Number one, that's number one. Number two is even, and then after Jesus is no longer with them, we see the remaining part of the New Testament, John, Paul, Peter, James, and the early church, they are obeying the Great Commission by teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And so, why are pre-trib pastors not following the apostolic example? Why are they not following it? The last generation of the church will encounter the Antichrist Great Tribulation. It will not encounter the day of the Lord's wrath. Antichrist Great Tribulation is not God's wrath upon believers. It is Satan's wrath.
Thanks for listening to Bible Prophecy Daily. We hope you learned something valuable today. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss an episode.